Welcome to the Lion's Roar Dharma Center podcast from Dona Dargye Temple. This public talk by Lama Yeshe Jinpa was recorded during a regularly scheduled Sunday morning service.
I have a number of different things to talk about today, but overall I want to talk about the aspect of path or journey. So most of the time we're not starting, we've already started, and most of the time we're not at the finish, we're in the middle. We're halfway up the mountain, which is actually pretty profound to be halfway up the mountain. So how we overall do our life, do our practice, is the aspect of path. The path is not just learning techniques that then all of a sudden you arise as a Buddha, generally. The path is more like winding up a mountain. Anybody ever tried driving in India or Italy? Or has anybody actually grown up sailing the way I did, where sometimes you have to get back into port and you have a headwind, so you have to tack, right? Or maybe some people have actually walked labyrinths and then you're constantly like this. It's significant in human anatomy that the organs that have the most curves and switchbacks are which two? The GI tract, brain. Okay, so okay, so that's generally how our path goes. We do want to get to the goal, but to cover all the territory, it's going to be a lot of switchbacks. That's why I like labyrinths, because if you think about a labyrinth as covering the whole territory, that's the way to do it. You won't cover the whole territory by just going straight to it. You cover the whole territory by doing this. So sometimes we say, like, Vajrayana, or indestructible vehicle, or Tantrayana, continuity vehicle, or Mahamudra Dzogchen's quick path. Quick path doesn't mean linear path. Quick path actually means like you cover all the territory. So actually I like, is it Lama Tony that says, I like great completion rather than great perfection? Yeah, so Lama Tony Dafsa, American translator, so of Dzogchen texts and Mahayana texts. So great completion means like we've covered all the territory. So if you want to cover all the territory really fast, you learn how to build a mandala, you learn how to see the world as a mandala, you learn how to walk a labyrinth, you learn how to sail into the wind and tack. You learn how to climb a mountain by doing that. Like, isn't that how snakes do this, right? We'd like to be able to accomplish all the goals by just aiming straight toward it, but actually that's usually the path of aggression. Right, you know, it's usually like, get the F out of my way, I'm on a mission, you know, you just do that. It's the way bullets are fired straight, correct? So we in Dharma, we kind of go like this. It's a wave pattern, right? Rhythm. So when we say, of course, Peter is giving good instruction, like straighten up a little bit, it means put your curved spine in alliance and in line with gravity, correct? You don't literally have a, it's not stick, right? It's going to look a little curvy, but it's in line. So this curved windy or snake-like path has an imaginary balance line running through it called like equanimity or the middle way. The traditional way to learn how to walk the path aspect, like how to do the practice, is to go on pilgrimage. So you actually go somewhere, in this case, you know, most of us, we'd say going to India. In Tibet, they couldn't go to India after a while, so they'd do, you know, pilgrimage in Tibet, of course. But you see, just kind of like Canterbury Tales, a little bit, right? That was pilgrimage, right? Didn't any take English the way I did, you know? I had to go from one cathedral to another, and it was rainy and boring in Britain, I'm sure. So from one saint's relic, so you'd tell stories and stuff. So the path includes telling stories as we journey from one point to the next. There's not very many people I know that actually, not that many people that actually like, you know, done like true pilgrimage. It's hard because it's different than tourist style. The only person I, you know that well who's done pilgrimage is my wife Sabina, because she did it with my friend Lama Gursum. My Drigyo Kargyu friend, and it wasn't vacation. They thought, oh good, you know, we'll get up leisurely, have some chai, and then kind of walk around to the shops, and then when they, you know, in the afternoon they'd visit a temple, and no, like Lama Gursum had them getting up at 4 o'clock, doing meditation and service for 2 hours, then they get in this bus or walk somewhere, and then, you know, they were doing practice all the time. Going from, you know, Bodh Gaya to Sopemba, and Milarepa's cave, and Nalanda, places like that, and she's still complaining about it. So that, that's, you know, like, and then my friend Geshe Genden volunteered to take a member in the past on pilgrimage, and that member also thought they would be staying at, like, you know, okay places, you know, like at least a 3-star hotel or something like that. They wouldn't be staying at the Oberoi 5-star hotel or something, or the something like that. So you stay in these kind of, you know, run-down thingies, and then you go to the temple, right? And maybe the closest in the West is the Santiago de Compostela, right? The walking from France all the way to the Santiago, yeah, St. James's place. Anybody done that? You have done it, yeah. Yeah. Did you get blisters?
Horrible.
Yeah, I mean,
it wasn't a vacation.
Right, exactly. I don't know. Maybe it was, I hope it was worthwhile. Yeah. One of the movies I like, actually, from Christian Catholic point of view, is with Martin Sheen, you know, like, called The Way. Anybody seen that? Yeah. So, it's a while ago, but, you know, he had conflicted relationships with his son, I think, who, you know, they didn't get along, and then his son died, right? And, you know, then and then somebody suggested he go on the pilgrimage, And he struggled along with it. It felt very realistic, you know. So that's the real sense of pilgrimage, you know. There's, you're working on something at the same time. You're chewing on something, you know, like with it. You have a question or you have something to work out, and you're journeying with others. So usually pilgrimage is done with others too, like that. There's also a very famous couple of Chinese monks in the Middle Ages, European Middle Ages, who journeyed to Nalanda and Vikramashila, and then it became the Chinese book on monkey. They made a few TV shows out of it. Journey to the West. That's right. Journey to the West. Yeah. Yeah. And that's a great book because there's this very pious monk. And you can help me if I'm not telling you. There's a very pious monk who's just doing all the right things. And then there's monkey, you know, which is kind of the Sancho Panza to, you know, Mano La Mancha, right? You know, so the monkey's always kind of getting things in trouble and turning things around. And
well, you had three companions.
You had three.
And to me, they all represent, it's like all four of them together as one person.
Yeah, different qualities. Yeah, different qualities, yeah. So, I mean, when we go on pilgrimage, then, I mean, at some point everybody kind of goes, I wish I could just be home in my bed, you know. Do we have to, like, you know? Because they drag you, you know. I've been on pilgrimage, yeah, they drag you, they, you know, your teachers drag you, and they go, you've got to see this. And it's going to be another, just like, it could be a temple, but a lot of times it's a place. And they go, well, this is where blah, blah happened. And all you see is just kind of like, I don't, you know, like we have roadside markers near the Midway Health Office, actually near Sutter Middle School. There's a plaque that says this used to be the place of the Chinese cemetery. You know, there's a large Chinese population here. Of course, we turned it into something else. But, you know, so there's just a plaque there, and you kind of go, oh, this was, you know, but that would be a place of pilgrimage. But sometimes it wouldn't be a plaque, just your teacher would go, well, this is where da-da-da-da, you know, Maitreya appeared to a Sangha, and, you know, it's just this place, you know. And you're thinking, am I supposed to have some kind of profound experience? You know, what am I supposed to, and we, you know, do we, you know, like so. But all that's part of the pilgrimage, part of the journey, right? Like that. So I've asked Michael Hatfield to give a presentation on his pilgrimage experiences. I think Patty generously surrendered her talk date. So I'm not sure what date that is, but I know Mike's one of the few people that's actually, you know, been in Tibet, right? Yeah. So I haven't been to Tibet, just been to India, and, you know, so that's important. You know, we want to talk to actually people who've been places and what that was like, and, you know, journey. So a sense of journey. And doesn't have to be elaborate this time. Like, we don't have to have the screen and the audiovisual shots, you know, go easy on you, but that, we'll want to make that. But with the path aspect, with pilgrimage journey, it's not just what we've seen or done, but how did we change as things, you know, progressed. Are you the same person when you came back? What was important? In the Zen tradition, in Japan, they look to China generally during the early Middle Ages for as the source. So one famous teacher, people who studied Zen centers know, is Dogen Zenji, right? So he studied at a number of different schools, basically in one of the large monasteries, the Tendai Monastery, and wanted to deepen his knowledge. Like most pilgrims, I think Dogen and Marpa too, when he went to India, they go a little bit with, it's corrupt here, I want to go to I want to go to the real thing, right? And we can take that on an outer level, but also kind of inner level too, right? My situation's kind of corrupted, I need to purify, or I need to get inspiration. So anyway, Dogen went and studied with a wonderful teacher, and people asked a famous discussion, like, what did you attain? His teacher said, what did you realize or attain during your time in the Great Middle Kingdom? So did anybody know that story? Good, you won't know if I tell it wrong. Haha. So that's okay. No, I do know it. So he said, my eyes are horizontal and my nose is vertical. Yeah. So this is sometimes made into kind of a teaching story or kind of koan story. What did you attain? My eyes are horizontal and my nose is vertical. Yeah. So we, in our tradition, are used to being questioned, right? Where do you come from? So if someone's coming to pilgrimage, or coming to see a teacher, lots of times the master, and in Vajrayana too, will say, you know, where are you coming from? there's a joke in psychiatry, where the doctor asks the patient, how'd you get here? And they say, the bus, right? So mark that down under on our MSE mental status exam, concrete thinker, you know. But sometimes that's not a bad answer, you know. But it usually goes deeper than that. Where are you coming from? Yeah. So, and then, you know, finally, like, well, where are you going now? Right. So these are pilgrimage questions, right? And then, you know, like how, so there's never really, when a teacher is asking you about path aspects, just a little clue for darshan, that there's never any innocent questions. You know, like I might innocently, well, how's it going? I just kind of, it's been a long day. Usually I just let people pass, I go, fine. But sometimes I don't let that pass. So the questions on a pilgrimage should be like this. So let's say you're in a relationship and you have a loved one at home or something, and you say, oh, I'm just going out for a few whatevers, I'll be back at 10. But you're back at 1. So the question from your partner is never an innocent question, is it? Where have you been? That's the real journey, right? Where have you been? What am I going to say about that, right? Where have I been? Are you thinking about, are you working up a story before you get home? So these are, where are you coming from? Where are you going? What's the journey been like? These three questions, yeah. So we should always think about that when we're doing our path, not necessarily thinking linear style all the time. Linear style is, am I getting the technique right? I do like linear style. I want people to learn how to do techniques, you know, but let's just assume we're all really good, dedicated people, and we've got the technique right. You know, we're basically, okay, I've studied the meditation text, I've read the text, I'm sitting correctly. You know, that's not the end. You've just, you know, you figured out how to sharpen your knife, but then what? So we're always going to be asking, you know, where did you come from? Or what do you bring me? Or what? Where have you been wandering? And where are you going after this? Those are no innocent questions. Right? But I think Mike has a couple of weeks to prepare or something like that. We'll see. But I think he's ready because he already knows where he's been. So now, a little 11:45, we have some time for discussion and questions and complaints also. And you must use the mic.
So if the path is twisty and turny, how do you know if you're doing it right or not?
So you mean technique-wise?
No, I mean I'm being a little facetious, but if it feels long and twisty, how do you have the faith that you're going in the right direction?
Well, the general direction is, you know, refuge. So that's why it's awkward, but I do like Alex Bergson's translation as taking safe direction. It just doesn't, I go for refuge to Lama, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, and we do it in Sanskrit, but it goes, I take safe direction. It doesn't sound quite as nifty, but, you know, we're constantly checking. You know, or what direction are we going? And then we have these four checkpoints, right? Lama, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So we check in, actually. And that's why we're hiring the four jewels. We're checking in. Because the ability to deceive is strong, right? You know, denial and distraction. You know, just these basic, wonderful defenses, they're big. So we check in. Probably, you know, if all four of those, sometimes they call, you know, all four of those say, you know, you're going over a cliff, you should listen. Yeah. then there's the four legs of the table teaching I've given in the past, which is, is it logical? We actually believe in logic. We can think in our tradition, you know. But basically, does this make sense? In other words, are we going to get the result that we expect? Most people really don't think about cause and effect at all. They don't think, well, what's going to happen afterwards? You know, a lot of people think, well, I'll hit the wall and then I'll deal with it later, you know. So we logic, and then we look to the, you know, tradition. It's like, what have other people said? You know, we sometimes say scripture, but we actually mean what have other people done, right? Not just said, but look at biographies of the teachers, you know, Buddhas, or, you know, people writings, or just what have other people done? Even contemporary teachers, like how did you guys handle this, right? Then the third, of course. You know, we are, you know, actually asking our teacher like that. The Lama's in there in both refuge and the four legs. And the final one is, you know, we're just checking our motivation and awareness. Because it finally comes down to that. There's no spring at the bottom. There's no, you know, like ultimate... you know, self-righting mechanism. If we're not paying attention, if we're not really looking and examining ourselves, we're screwed. So we have to take responsibility for our lives ultimately and go, wow, I better really pay attention to my motivation and you know, occasionally, like, look at the ground and then look up. So one teacher, I think it's from Tibet, but since spending years in Vermont and Maine, like, if you're walking in cow fields, you want to mostly, you want to spend a lot of time looking down and occasionally looking up, right? So you're constantly doing that checking. So there's the four refuges and the four things like that. And people still go haywire. But actually, people can learn. You know, if you go, I'm going to learn, just the next time I do this, I'm going to learn. But there's a famous poem from Recovery Model. I walk down the street, I fall in the hole. I'm shortening it. I walk down the street, I see the hole, I fall in. I walk down the street, I see the hole, I walk around it. The last one is, I walk down another street. Okay? So, yeah, we actually want to walk down another street. We're not, you know, just, we haven't reached, you know, we haven't really reached the end when we're just saying, yeah, I see it and I walk around it. That's risky, right? That's actually risky. That we have to do that, but you can't stop there. That, yeah.
Thank you.
Good question. We could spend the whole day on that, but we'll give it to one other person maybe. Somebody, yeah, oh, good.
Well, I didn't have a very good question.
Yeah, I didn't have a very good one.
I was just wondering about the idea of creating a pilgrimage here to different centers.
That would be fun to create a local pilgrimage and then national pilgrimage like that. So that's a good idea. You know, let's show up. Other groups have done that, like my friends, the Lymans from Spiritual Life Center have shown up here a few times. Like, we're just going to see what you guys are doing because that's part of our, you know, our deal. So it'd be fun. Like, we all show up someplace and go, we're all here from Dona Dargé, and, you know, like that.
Well, there's also a lot here, I think, that's the establishment of Buddhism in the United States.
Yes. There's
so,
quite a lot.
You know, a lot of things have happened here, really, in the last 50 years.
A lot of really interesting things have happened. There's a lot of sacred spots already, this being one, actually. A lot of wonderful teachers and wonderful practice centers, stupas and practice centers, and interesting things have happened, you know, right here on this side of the pond. Yeah, that's a good idea. Geshe talked about taking people to Mongolia. Yeah, that would be nice, yeah. So next week, I'm not sure, maybe Marie will be talking, right? So I'm working with her on a kind of a practice, like, it's actually, like, we have to talk about it more, but it's called Feeding Your Demons. So we're talking about that a little bit. Not, we won't be doing, she won't be doing the practice, but it's a Western Lama, Soltrim Aliona, she's a Taramandala in Crestone, Colorado. She's a chip practitioner, right? They're doing a drum, bell, horn. And she's developed a practice that is inspired by the chip practice, where people go to scary places and invite the demons in instead of trying to avoid, your conflicts, you're a little bit inviting them in. Pema Chodron, the American nun teacher, has a book called Go to the Places That Scare You. You know, that's a quote, from Machig, you know, Mother Lot, Drobjohn. You know, go to the places that scare you, like cemetery. People ask me if I've ever done anything scary, and I just say, I got married and had kids, so I don't have to go to the cemetery. I've done that practice. So she's combined some of the inspiration from Chod practice with Western psychological process, Jungian Gestalt-y kinds of things. I like that she acknowledges it. Says, well, you know, like, this isn't strictly Chod practice, which would require a retreat and initiation, but this is kind of somewhat, you know, you're doing a little bodhicitta aspiration to begin with, doing this for all beings, and then there's a resting and awareness at the end of the process. So there's a little bit like that. So I kind of like it. And at the same time, I'm a little bit skeptical because it can be quite difficult practice. So I don't think it's good to do it without, like, under a teacher supervision kind of thing. American Dharma is kind of mostly like DIY, but do it yourself. But lots of times it ends up like the Mickey Mouse and the Sorcerer's Apprentice. And many psychological techniques like Jungian dream work and active imagination and Gestalt empty chair work get taken out of the therapeutic container, so to speak, and then they're kind of out. So they become a problem like that. So I'm just addressing that. People in the audience know I kind of rant against psychologized dharmas where we're not distinguishing what we're doing. But I like that. I don't know Self-Train personally, but I like that she's done that. So we'll talk about that more, just a little kind of, you know, coming soon. Like that. Yeah, so a lot of times too, like, with very famous skillful therapists, the strength and the personality of the therapist is what carries the day. So when the technique leaves that container, that person, then it's not as effective. Like when Fritz Perls was doing his thing, I mean, he had strong personality. You know, you can watch, you got to go through, everyone going through grad school has to watch these Fritz Perls video. So, you go, wow, that's really powerful. And then, or Carl Whitaker, or, you know, these famous people, even like, you know, some contemporary therapists, very strong, right? But if you take it out of that container and out of that strong personality, just like in Dharma, then it's kind of like, it's a little bit more, sometimes loses the power, sometimes it kind of, the genie has escaped the bottle, so to speak, right? So I'm just sensitive. I really want you guys to get top drawer stuff, right? That's a mission of mine, like, why lie, right? So just top, we want to be top.
This has been a Lion's Roar Dharma Center recording. For more information, visit lionsroardharmacenter.org.